Brother Randy Foliard with the message of today.
I'd like to welcome everybody here. It's nice seeing everyone. We're just a few today, but still a blessing to see those who are here. You know, if I told you today that sin had consequences, would you believe me? Most of us, and most of you probably would. Although the world that we live in today has largely forgotten this, they've forgotten the impact of sin. People in this nation and across this world no longer know what sin is. And that's what I want to speak to you about today, sin, the consequences and the impact of sin. In our culture, sin is a word that is taboo, that is politically incorrect, that is judgmental and often unheard by the masses. You know, 50 years ago, you could visit almost any church in this nation and hear about the impact of sin. But now we hear messages about achieving our dreams, finding success in this life, and being all that we can be now. The focus in this nation is moved from what we can do for Yahweh to what Yahweh can do for us. We see in this life, in this nation, that we're no longer concerned about living for Yahweh, doing what's right according to our Father's command, His commandments, His law. But yet we're concerned about the now, about the life we have in this day and age. We're not concerned about what's pleasing to our Father, but only about our own selfish needs and wants. You know, I believe that this change of focus is a result of ministers moving away from sin to the popular self-help seminars that we see on the TV every Sunday morning. Many who go to church nowadays do so to be motivated, to be entertained, to find out what Yahweh can do for them, to hear about the potential that they have now in this life. Few, on the other hand, go to hear Yahweh's standards of morality, His word. Few go to hear about sin. Few go to hear about chastisement. Just as clay is molded and formed, the goal of a true believer is to reform his or her own life according to Yahweh's word, through the instruction of Yahweh's word. From the very beginning, did Yahweh establish a moral compass for man? Yahweh commanded His laws, not as a burden, as many people believe, but as a benefit. Only a culture, only a nation, built on Yahweh's laws and commandments can thrive and flourish. Anything else will fall. In this nation and world that we live in today, we see Yahshua's Olivet prophecy in Matthew 24, Mark 13, Luke 21, coming to pass. It's coming to life. Sin and iniquity has multiplied in this nation and the world more than anyone would have probably ever anticipated 50 years ago. The reason that we see what we do today is due to one simple cause, and that is a denial of sin. When we deny Yahweh's law and accept sin, we must anticipate the results. And today we're seeing those results. Now, before we consider the impact of sin, let's first define the nature of sin. Turn with me, if you would, to 1 John chapter 3, verse 4. 1 John chapter 3, verse 4. John says here, everyone that commits sin also transgresses the law, for sin is the transgression of the law. Here we find the definition of sin. John says that sin is the transgression or breaking of Yahweh's law. Now, many ministers will say today that we're to avoid sin. But few ever define what sin is. You see, without knowing what sin is, we have no means, we have no way of knowing how to avoid it. To avoid something, you must have knowledge of what you're avoiding. It's no different from repairing a vehicle. To do either, you must have knowledge of what you're doing. And here we see that to avoid sin, according to John, that we're not to break, transgress, go against Yahweh's law. Now, what law is John speaking about? He's speaking about the only law that existed in his time, during his life, and that was the Old Testament Torah law. We know historically that the New Testament was not yet compiled or available at this time. It wasn't in existence. There's a different type of sin, James chapter 4, verse 17. James chapter 4, verse 17. James, Yahshua's brother, says to him, therefore, that knows to do good and does it not, to him it is sin. Here we have a slightly different definition of sin from that of John. James defines sin as anything we do that we know to be wrong, to be incorrect, to be against Yahweh's word. In other words, when we know something to be wrong and we continue in it, we're guilty of sin. Understand that not every violation or sin is found in the Old Testament Torah. The Torah is like an ever-breathing, living moral compass. Every time you read the Torah, you can find some additional truths you never saw before. And it points man in the right direction. But we can see this, for instance, Yahweh told Abraham to sacrifice his only son Isaac from Sarah. And we know that if Abraham did not go through with that, we know that he never did. Yahweh stopped it. But if he refused, he would have been guilty of sin. He would have been guilty of disobeying Yahweh's command. And we're going to see examples of this today. People being guilty of breaking Yahweh's law and the consequences and the impact of rebellion, of sin. We here and all of Yahweh's people have a choice to make. Turn with me to Deuteronomy chapter 30. We have a choice to make. We can choose one direction over another, but both renders consequences. Deuteronomy chapter 30, beginning with verse 6. Yahweh says, and Yahweh Elohim will circumcise your heart and the heart of your seed to love Yahweh Elohim with all your heart and with all your soul, that you may do what? That you may live. And Yahweh Elohim will put all these curses upon your enemies and upon them that hate you and that persecute you. And you shall return and obey the voice of Yahweh and do all his commandments which I command you this day. And Yahweh Elohim will make you plenteous in all the work of your hand and the fruit of your body and in the fruit of your cattle and the fruit of your ground for good. For Yahweh will again rejoice over you for good as he rejoiced over your fathers. Verse 10, if you shall obey the voice of Yahweh Elohim to keep the commandments and his statutes which are written in this book of the law, if you turn to Yahweh Elohim with all your heart and with all your soul, for this commandment which I command you this day is not too hard for you, neither is it far off. Notice that it's not something too difficult. We can do this. Yahweh says, I haven't given you too much, something that's impossible to do. He says, no, you can do this. Notice here that Yahweh told Israel to circumcise their hearts. Now, many believe that circumcision of the heart is only a New Testament concept, but here we see different. Circumcision of the heart can be found all the way back in the Old Testament, Deuteronomy. Really, the continuity is wonderful when you realize the truth in Yahweh's word, that what we find in the old, we find in the new. What we find in the new, we find in the old. There's a continuity there. Yahweh in the Old Testament desired a people who would love him from their heart and soul, who would follow in his ways, and who would live according to his laws and commandments. Yahweh told Israel that if she would do this, that she would be blessed. But if she refused, Yahweh said that she would be cursed. You see, when it comes to life and Yahweh's word, we really only have two choices, obey or disobey. With both of these options also come consequences. If we obey, we're promised blessings. We're promised Yahweh's protection. If we disobey, we're promised cursings. Whether it's adultery, fornication, lying, or any other sin, when we ignore Yahweh's word, we suffer the penalty of sin. And that's going to become painfully obvious as we go through this message. Let's skip down to verse 15. See, I've set before you this day life and good and death and evil. Notice that Yahweh set these things forth all the way back in the Old Testament. And that I command you this day to love Yahweh Elohim, to walk in His ways and to keep His commandments and His statutes and His ordinances, that you may live and multiply, and that Yahweh Elohim may bless you in the land which you go in to possess. But if your heart turns away, and you will not hear, but shall be drawn away and worship other Elohim, and serve them, I declare to you this day that you shall surely perish, and shall not prolong your days in the land which you go pass over the Jordan to go into possess. I call heaven and earth to witness against you this day, that I have set forth you life and death, the blessings and the curse. Therefore choose life, that you may live, you and your seed, to love Yahweh Elohim, to obey His voice, to hold fast to Him, for He is your life and the length of days, that you may dwell in the land which Yahweh swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give them. Here again do we see that we have a choice as Yahweh's people. We can either A, follow Yahweh's ways and reap the blessings and benefits that can only come from our Father in heaven. Or B, we can rebel against Him. We can rebel against His word. And we can suffer the penalty of sin. Yahweh here told Israel to choose between life and death, between blessings and cursings, between His way and their own way. Today we're offered this same choice. Which will we choose? What direction will we go as Yahweh's people? Will we choose life and blessings from Yahweh's word, or will we choose to rebel against Him, to go the other way, to seek our own ways? If we say that we choose Yahweh's way, then we must mold ourselves according to His word. Saying is simply not enough. It's not enough to simply verbalize your faith. Yahweh demands more. He demands change and sacrifice. The thing that many don't understand is that Yahweh demands complete loyalty and devotion to Him. If we're not willing to do this, if we're only willing to sort of dabble in the truth, then we might as well pack our bags and go home. Because without this devotion, without this dedication, our faith, our belief, our conviction, our religion is in vain. And as Solomon would say, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Turn with me to Romans now. Romans chapter 1. We can see a reflection of our own day. Romans chapter 1, verse 26. For this cause Yahweh gave them up to passions of dishonor. For their women changed the natural use into that which is against nature. And likewise also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust toward one another. Men with men working in decency, and receiving in themselves the recompense of their error which was due. And even as they refused to have Elohim in their knowledge, you see, it's not Yahweh, it's man who refuses to acknowledge Yahweh. They refuse to acknowledge Yahweh. Yahweh says Elohim gave them up to a reprobate mind to do those things which are not fitting, being filled with all unrighteousness, wickedness, covetous, maliciousness, full of envy, murder, strife, deceit, malignity, whispers, backbiters, hateful to Elohim, insolent, haughty, boastful, inventors of evil things, disobedient to parents, without understanding, covenant breakers, without natural affection, unmerciful, who knowing the ordinances of Yahweh, that they that practice such things are worthy of death, not only do the same, and listen to this, this is important, but also consent with them that practice them. In other words, those who fellowship, those who have relationship, that's what the Greek's indicating, with those who commit such sins as we see here. What are we seeing today in this nation? Right now we're seeing the strongest push ever to accept and even legalize gay marriage, one of the most critical institutions, if not the most, that Yahweh himself established in the beginning with Adam and Eve, is under heavy attack. In the last few years, we've seen opinions about sodomy change drastically. The days of sodomy being thought of as a sin, as an abomination that Yahweh abhors, has been replaced with patience, tolerance, and acceptance. Now, why have we seen such a change in opinion? Why have we seen such a degradation in morality and marriage? We've seen all this due to a lack of concern for sin. People nowadays don't want to know. They refuse to know what sin is. People rather not be bothered. They'd rather not be hindered by Yahweh's law, his word, his standard of morality. In the last few decades, we've seen an increase in divorce, single-parent homes, fornication, adultery, crimes committed by both adults and children, an increase in abortion, and the list goes on. The nation that we see today is in opposition to Yahweh's word. It's in opposition to morality, and worse yet, a companion and a friend to sin. What we see in this nation is nothing more than the result of sin and a rebellion against Yahweh's word. Let's look at now some examples to see how sin can impact people individually and collectively. Look at the impact of sin in Acts chapter 5. Acts chapter 5, verse 1. Here we're going to look at the example of Ananias. Acts chapter 5, verse 1, it says, "But a certain man named Ananias, Sapphira's wife, sold a possession and kept back part of the price, his wife also being knowledgeable of it, and brought a certain part and laid it at the apostles' feet. But Peter said, Ananias, why has Satan filled your heart to lie to the Holy Spirit and to keep back part of the price of the land? While it remained, did it not remain in your own? And after it was sold, was it not in your power? How is it that you have conceived this thing in your heart? You have not lied to men, but to Yahweh." And Ananias, hearing these words, fell down and gave up the spirit, and great fear came upon all that heard it. And the young men arose and wrapped him around, and they carried him out and buried him. Now we see his wife coming through the door. Verse 7, "And it was about the space of 3 hours after, when his wife, not knowing what he was done, came in. And Peter answered to her, Tell me whether you sold the land for so much. And she said, Yes, for so much. But Peter said to her, How is it that you have agreed together to try the spirit of Yahweh? Behold, the feet of them that have buried your husband are at the door, and they shall carry you out. And she fell down immediately at his feet and gave up the spirit. And the young men came in and found her dead. And they carried her out and buried her by her husband. And great fear came upon the whole assembly and upon all that heard these things." We see here that both Ananias and his wife died because of greed, and really because of the love of money. When Ananias sold his house, he lied and kept back part of the earnings that he had promised to the assembly and ultimately to Yahweh. You know, in many ways, we do exactly this when we keep back our tithe from Yahweh. Remember that the tithe is holy to Yahweh. It's set apart. It's not ours. It belongs to Yahweh and is sanctified to him. But here we see that because of greed and the love of money, that two people died. Ultimately, here is the result of all sin. Eventually, all who pursue sin without repentance will die in their sin. As we saw in Deuteronomy, we now have a choice to choose between life and death. And it's totally up to us which way we go. We can go the route of life and follow Yahweh, or we can go the way of death and follow man. We see in this example that Ananias and his wife chose death because of sin, because of money, because of a lie. understand that sin carries a very real consequence. Sin is not something that we should toy with, but something that we should avoid, strive to overcome. Before moving on, notice what Peter told Ananias in verse 4. Peter told Ananias that he had not lied to men, but to Yahweh. How often do we think of sin in this way? How often do we realize that when we sin not against man, but against Yahweh? You know, I've had people come to me and apologize to me for not keeping the feast or a Sabbath. And you know, that's just not right. Understand that I will not judge. Matter of fact, no man or minister will judge. We know one will judge, and that's the Son, Yahshua. If we do something wrong, don't be afraid of the man. Be afraid of him who will judge all men according to their deeds. Because when we don't do something right, we're not sinning against the person. Ultimately, we're sinning against Yahweh. When we don't keep his Sabbath or his feast or tithe or whatever it is, we're not sinning against man. We're breaking Yahweh's law. We're dishonoring Yahweh, not man. And I think that this was a real good point Peter brought out. That look, what you're doing is not to man, but you're doing this to Yahweh. Let's now look at our first example, second example, really. We'll look at Eli, 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 22. And for the most part, this man was fairly righteous, a good man, but he had one flaw. And we're going to read about that flaw here. 1 Samuel chapter 2, verse 22. So now, Eli was very old, and he heard all that his sons did in all Israel, and how that they lay with women and did service at the door of the tent of meetings. Here they are committing fornication, adultery, and still doing Yahweh's work. And he knew about this. And he said to them, "What do you do such things? For I hear of your evil dealings from all the people. No, my sons, for it is no good report that I hear. You make Yahweh's people to transgress. If one man sins against another, Elohim shall judge him. If a man sins against Yahweh, who shall pray for him?" However, they did not listen to their voice of their father, because it was Yahweh's will to put them to death. And the child Samuel grew on and increased in favor both with Yahweh and also with men. And we know that, really, Samuel replaced Eli once Eli died. But that's another story. Let's continue with verse 27. "And there came a man of Elohim to Eli and said to him, 'In this manner, says Yahweh, did I reveal myself to the house of your father? Why then, when they were in Egypt in bondage and Pharaoh's house? And did I choose him out of all the tribes of Israel to be my priest, to go up to my altar, to burn incense, to wear an ephod before me? And gave I to the house of your father all the offerings of the children of Israel made by fire? Why do you kick or scoff at my sacrifice and at my offerings? What have I commanded in my habitation, and to honor your sons above me?'" That was this man's problem. He honored his sons above Yahweh. "To make yourselves fat with the foremost of all the offerings of Israel, my people. Therefore, Yahweh, the Elohim of Israel, says, I said indeed that your house and the house of your father should walk before me forever. But now, Yahweh says, be it far from me. For them that honor me, I will honor. And they that despise me shall be lightly esteemed. Behold, the days come that I will cut off your arm and the arm of your father's house, and there shall not be an old man in your house, and you shall behold the affliction of my habitation and all the wealth which Elohim shall give Israel, and there shall not be an old man in your house forever. And the man of yours whom I shall not cut off from my altar shall be consumed, consume your eyes and to grieve your heart, and all the increase of your house shall die in the flower of their age. 34, and this shall be the sign to you that shall come to pass, your two sons on Hophni and Phinehas, and one day they shall die, both of them. Look at verse 3, verse 13, real quick here. It says, For I have told him I will judge his house forever for the iniquity which he knew, because his sons brought a curse on themselves, and he did not, listen to that, he did not restrain them. By this example, we see that sin often impacts more than the sinner. Here we see that Eli, or Eli, a righteous man, a priest, allowed his sons to sin knowingly. And that key word is knowingly, before Yahweh and the people. Now notice that because Eli allowed this, that not only were Eli's sons punished by Yahweh, but also Eli and all future generations after him, his whole house forever, was cursed. We see that when we allow sin to continue, that we're in many ways as guilty as a sinner. You know, this is even more true for a minister in the faith, as we see here with Eli. When a minister refuses to take a stand on sin and allows sin to remain, then that person is as guilty as the sinner. It's so important that those who minister in Yahweh's word understand the consequences and the impact of allowing sin to remain. In one example, the Apostle Paul had to chastise the Corinthian assembly for not only allowing sin, but for also being puffed up and proud about it. In this example, the Corinthian assembly was allowing incest to take place between a son and a stepmom. In many ways, we're proud of our sins in this nation, aren't we? We parade it. Here it is, Yahweh. See no difference here. In this case, Paul told the Corinthians to remove and deliver such a one to Satan for the destruction of the flesh. He said to remove the problem, to remove the sin, by removing the person. In this same way, Paul compared sin to leaven and said that a little leaven leavens a whole lump. You see, unless sin is stopped and removed, sin by nature multiplies and grows. It's like cancer. It doesn't stop until it's removed totally and completely, as it only takes a very small amount of leaven to puff up a bread. It only takes a very small amount of sin to ruin an assembly, if allowed. If a minister won't take a stand on sin, no matter how small that sin might be, that sin is guaranteed to grow and flourish. When it comes to sin, we can either be proactive, meaning that before sin becomes a problem, we remove it, as the Apostle Paul did. Or we can be reactive, meaning that we allow that sin to grow until it ruins an assembly, a marriage, whatever it is, until it ruins. Let's now look at another example. So many examples we can find, so many lessons. 1 Samuel chapter 15. 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 1. And Samuel said to Saul, "Yahweh sent me to anoint you to be king over his people, over Israel. Now therefore listen to the voice of the words of Yahweh. In this manner, says Yahweh of hosts, I have marked that which Amalek did Israel, how he set himself against him in the way when he came up out of Egypt. Now go and strike Amalek, and utterly destroy all that they have, and spare them not, but kill both man and woman, infant and suckling, ox and sheep, camel and donkey." And Saul summoned the people and numbered them and tell them 200,000 footmen and 10,000 men of Judah. And Saul came to the city of Amalek and laid waste to the valley. And Saul said to the Kenites, "Go, depart, get you down from among the Amalekites, lest I destroy you with them. For you showed kindness to the children of Israel when they came out of Egypt. So the Kenites departed from among the Amalekites." And Saul struck the Amalekites from Havilah as far as Shur, that is before Egypt. And he took Agag, the king of the Amalekites, alive, and utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. But Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep and of the oxen and of the fatlings and of the lambs and all that was good, and would not utterly destroy them, for everything that was vile and refuse, that they destroyed utterly. We see here that Saul disobeyed Yahweh by not killing the king of the Amalekites or the best of the sheep, oxen, and lambs. Now, even though most of us might say that this action by Saul wasn't real crucial, Yahweh's word says otherwise. You know, one lesson that we can often learn when reading Yahweh's word is that our ways aren't always Yahweh's ways. Sometimes Yahweh thinks a bit differently. Often, Yahweh's ways are far different from man's. For instance, Yahweh has an absolute system of morality that stays constant, while man's system is anything but absolute and constant. Man's system of laws and morality is ever changing. It's ever changing. What might have been wrong 50 years ago is now normal and acceptable. For instance, the thought of sodomite marriages 50 years ago would have been horrifying. But yet, now, many people are pushing to legalize this most abominable union. Let's continue with verse 10. 1 Samuel chapter 15, verse 10. Then came the word of Yahweh to Samuel, saying, "It grieves me that I have set up Saul to be king, for he has turned back from following me and has not performed my commandment." And Samuel was angry. Samuel too was angry, not just Yahweh for what happened. Samuel was upset, and he cried to Yahweh all night. And Samuel rose early to meet Saul in the morning, and it was told to Samuel, saying, "Saul came to Carmel, and behold, he set himself up a monument and turned and passed on and went down to Gilgal. And Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said to him, 'Blessed be you of Yahweh. I have performed the commandment of Yahweh.' And Samuel said, 'What means then the bleating of the sheep in my ears and the lowing of the oxen which I hear?' And Saul said, 'They have brought them from the Amalekites, for the people speared the best of the sheep and of the oxen to sacrifice to Yahweh Elohim, and the rest we have utterly destroyed.' Then Samuel said to Saul, 'Stay, I will tell you what Yahweh has said to me this night.' And he said to him, 'Stay, say on.'" What I find amazing here is that Saul's motives for disobeying Yahweh weren't necessarily selfish or self-centered. But nonetheless, we see that Yahweh wasn't pleased with what Saul did. Here he was sacrificing the best to Yahweh. But remember what Yahweh said. He said, "Spare not. Kill every living thing with the edge of the sword." So even though Saul did what he did for Yahweh, at least in the case of the animals, Yahweh still judged him for his rebellion. You see, Saul made one mistake, and that was not following through with Yahweh's command. Again, showing that our ways aren't always Yahweh's ways. We're to follow Yahweh, not our own thinking. Let's move on and see the result of Saul's rebellion now. Verse 17. And Samuel said, "Though you were little in own sight, were you not made the head of the tribes of Israel?" The Benjaminites were basically the smallest tribe. And yet, the smallest tribe came the king. He was made the greatest of all. "And Yahweh anointed you king over Israel. And Yahweh sent you on a journey and said, 'Go and utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they be consumed.' Why then did you not obey the voice of Yahweh, but flew upon the plunder and did that which was evil in the sight of Yahweh?" And Saul said to Samuel, "Yes, I have obeyed the voice of Yahweh, and have gone the way which Yahweh sent me, and have brought Agag, the king of Amalek, and have utterly destroyed the Amalekites. But the people took of the plunder sheep." Now he's trying to blame it on the people, saying, "Wait a minute, you know, it wasn't me, it was the people with me." But he said, "The people took of the plunder sheep and oxen, the chief of the devoted things to sacrifice to Yahweh, your Elohim in Gilgal. And Samuel said, 'Has Yahweh as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of Yahweh?'" You see, the number one action that we can do as Yahweh's people is to obey. Yahweh says that he'd rather have obedience than sacrifice. That's what Yahweh wants, obedience. For us to obey his word. And to listen better than the fat of rams. For listen to verse 23. says, "For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as idolatry and teraphim. Because you have rejected the word of Yahweh, he has also rejected you from being king." Let's continue reading. I was going to stop here, but I want to read and illustrate to you how serious this was, that the king of the Amalekites had to be consumed one way or another. And here we see that Samuel was left to the task. It says, "And Saul said to Samuel, I have sinned, I have transgressed the commandment of Yahweh in your words, because I feared the people and obeyed their voice." How often do we give in to people and sacrifice Yahweh's word? How often do ministers refrain from preaching, whether it's marriage, whether it's tithing, whatever it is, because of the people? I can tell you it's too often. Verse 25, "Now therefore I pray you, pardon my sin and turn again with me, that I may worship Yahweh. And Samuel said to Saul, I will return unto you, for you have rejected the word of Yahweh, and Yahweh has rejected you from being king over Israel. And Samuel turned about to go away. Saul laid upon the skirt of his robe and tore it. And Samuel said to him, Yahweh has torn the kingdom of Israel from you this day, and has given it to your neighbor of yours that is better than you." Drop down to verse 32. It says, "And Samuel said, Bring here to me Agag, the king of the Amalekites. And Agag came to him cheerfully. And Agag said, Surely the bitterness of death is past." He thought the worst was behind him. Wrong. Verse 33, "And Samuel said, As your sword has made women childless, so shall your mother be childless among women. And Samuel cut Agag in pieces before Yahweh in Gilgal." Pretty serious thing. Samuel was not playing games. Yahweh said, this is the way this to be done. And Samuel followed through with Yahweh's command. But here we see the result of Saul's sin. Because Saul disobeyed Yahweh, Yahweh ripped the kingdom from him. We know that this sin, like many others, eventually led to Saul's own destruction. We know that before the kingdom was torn from Saul, that he received an evil spirit that tormented him. And we know that ultimately that he and his son Jonathan died on Mount Gilboa, as Yahweh promised. As we can see from this example, oftentimes punishment for sin does not stop with the sin. That's an important lesson to understand. But oftentimes this sort of sin can stay with a person and can be a continual thorn in their side. So while Yahweh is certainly a loving, mighty one who will forgive, who will show mercy, who does show love, he did to David, as we'll see. But as we will see also, sometimes a sin can plague a person for life. Sometimes it follows that person, even if we find forgiveness from it. And we're going to find an example of that, and we're going to turn there next. Let's look at David and Bathsheba. 2 Samuel chapter 12. 2 Samuel chapter 12. Let's begin with verse 1. "And Yahweh sent Nathan to David." And by the way, this is after David did what he did with Bathsheba. We know that he committed adultery. We know that he then murdered her husband. And he lied and did all other sorts of sins. But here is the result of the sin. Here is the result, the impact of the sin. "And Yahweh sent Nathan to David. And he came to him and said to him, There are two men in one city." And here's a parable Nathan gives. "The one rich and the other poor. The rich man had very many flocks and herds, but the poor man had nothing save one little ewe lamb, which he had brought and nourished up, and it grew up together with him and with his children. He ate of his own morsels and drank of his own cup and lay in his bosom and was in him as a daughter. And there came a traveler to the rich man, and he spared to take of his own flock and of his own herd to dress for the wayfaring man that had come to him, but took the poor man's lamb and dressed it for the man that had come to him. And David's anger was greatly kindled against this man. And he said to Nathan, "As Yahweh lives, the man that has done this is worthy to die, and he shall restore the lamb fourfold, because he did this thing, and because he had no pity." Notice that after Nathan told this story, that David's judgment was that this rich man should die for his sin. Now think about for just a moment how far worse David's crime was in comparison to what this rich man had done. And yet David said that this man was worthy of death. And David's own judgment, was he worthy of death? What he did was far worse and deserved a far worse penalty than that of the rich man. But yet we know that Yahweh had mercy upon him. I believe again that Yahweh looks upon the heart. Yahweh's ways aren't always our ways. Sometimes he thinks a little bit differently. And I'm sure he's right in all instances. In David's judgment, he deserved nothing less than the death penalty. Howbeit, in Yahweh's eyes, David received mercy. He was pardoned. He received grace. You see, Yahweh, again, looks upon the heart. He doesn't look on the outside of the man, but looks on the heart. He knows the heart, and here he knew David's heart. Let's read on and find the punishment, because there is a punishment here. The punishment that David had to go through. Let's look at verse 7. And Nathan said to David, "You are the man." And I'm sure at this point David was just shocked. You know, here he is, he's accusing this rich man, putting him to death. And Nathan turns to him and says, "You are that man. You're the one guilty of this." In this manner, says Yahweh, the Elohim of Israel, "I anointed you king over Israel, and I delivered you out of the hand of Saul, and I gave you your master's house and your master's wives into your bosom, and gave you the house of Israel of Judah. You added to you such and such things." If that wasn't enough, Yahweh said, "I'm going to give you more. I'm going to give you more. Why have you despised the word of Yahweh to do that which is evil in this sight? You have struck Uriah the Hittite with a sword, and have taken his wife to your wife, and have killed him with a sword of the children of Ammon. Now therefore the sword shall never depart from your house, because you have despised me, and have taken the wife of Uriah the Hittite to be your wife. In this manner, says Yahweh, behold, I will rise up evil against you out of your own house, and I will take your wives before your eyes, and give them to your neighbor, and he shall lie with your wives in the sight of this son. For you did it secretly, but I will do this thing before all Israel. Nothing is hidden from Yahweh." We think we're perhaps hiding our sins, but mark my words, nothing is beyond Yahweh. Yahweh watches us. He knows. He knows. "But I will do this thing before all Israel and before the sun." And David said to Nathan, "I have sinned against Yahweh." Nathan said to David, "Yahweh also has put away your sin. You shall not die." You know, David, even though he was confronted with this, he humbly submitted to Yahweh for forgiveness. You know, most men would make excuses, would try to justify, "Oh, I wasn't thinking, I was insane," or whatever. Not David. David said, "I've sinned." Verse 14, "However, because of this deed, you have given great occasion to the enemies of Yahweh to blaspheme." The Masora actually says, "Thou hast greatly blasphemed Yahweh." It's a little bit more stronger than what we see here. "And the child also that is born to you shall surely die." Even though David did not die for his sin, we see that his whole family suffered. As we saw with Eli, David's sin with Bathsheba impacted not only him, but his entire family. After David committed adultery with Bathsheba, murdered her husband Uriah the Hittite, David and his family suffered more than any one of us can probably comprehend. I'm always amazed to hear how many people justify sin by using David as an example. When I hear people use David to justify their sin, I never hear them talk about how David suffered. I always miss that part. They never talk about how much he had to suffer for what he did. Yahweh promised that because of David's sin, that the sword would never depart from his house. Would never depart from his house. Because of David's sin, Amnon raped his half-sister Tamar. As a result, Absalom, Tamar's full brother, murdered Amnon. Later on, tensions grew between David and Absalom. And eventually, Absalom drove David out of Jerusalem in an attempt to seize the throne. All in all, because of David's sins, he lost three of his sons through horrific deaths. Amnon, Absalom, and Adonijah all died because of David. And all this doesn't even include the death of his firstborn with Bathsheba. So when people use David as an example to justify their sins, remind them how David suffered. Remind them what he went through. Remind them that there is a penalty for sin. It's so important that we understand that even though Yahweh might forgive, as he did here, that there is yet a penalty for sin. And this is precisely why Yahweh commands that we abstain from sin. I'm going to look at one more example today. 1 Chronicles chapter 21. Again, it's of David. David's an amazing man. He made some horrible mistakes, but yet he's a man that we can all look to and find encouragement from. We can learn lessons good and bad from David, what not to do and what to do. 1 Chronicles chapter 21. We're going to begin with verse 1. It says, Satan stood up against Israel. Notice that Satan stood up, the accuser of the brethren, and moved David to number Israel. And David said to Joab and to the princesses of the people, go, number Israel before from Beersheba even to Dan, and bring me word that I may know the sum of them. And Joab said, May Yahweh make his people 100 times as many as they are, but my sovereign, the king, are they not all my sovereign's servants? Why does my sovereign require this thing? Why will he be a cause of guilt of Israel, Joab says. Nevertheless, the king's word prevailed against Joab. Therefore, Joab departed and went throughout all Israel and came to Jerusalem and gave up the sum of the numbering of the people to David. And all they of Israel were 1,100,000 men that drew sword. And Judah was 470,000 men that drew sword. But Levi and Benjamin he did not count among them, for the king's word was abominable to Joab. He understood it. And Elohim, verse 7, was despised with this thing. Therefore he punished Israel. And David said to Elohim, I have sinned greatly. There it is again, his humbled spirit. Not justifying, but submitting humbly before Yahweh. I have sinned greatly, and that I have done this thing, but now put away, I plead you, the iniquity of your servant, for I have done very foolishly. So what happened? Is that the end of this story? Was there no consequence or impact for a sin? Let's read on and find out. Because most people would stop there and say, oh, Yahweh forgave him. And Yahweh did forgive. But there's more to the story. And Yahweh spoke to Gad, David's seer, saying, go and speak to David. For you three things, choose one of them, that I may do it to you. So here's the penalty for David's crime. So Gad came to David and said to him in this manner, says Yahweh, take which you will, either 3 years of famine or 3 months be consumed before your foes while the sword of your enemies overcome you, or else 3 days, the sword of Yahweh, even the pestilence in the land, and the angel of Yahweh destroying throughout all the borders of Israel. Now therefore consider what your answer. I shall return to him that sent me. And David said to Gad, I am in a great distress. Let me fall, I pray, into the hand of Yahweh. For great are his mercies, and let him not fall into the hand of man. So Yahweh sent a pestilence upon Israel, and there fell of Israel 70,000 men. And Elohim sent an angel to Jerusalem to destroy it. And as he was about to destroy, Yahweh beheld, and here we see Yahweh's mercy at work. Yahweh beheld, and he repented, lamented basically, lamented of the evil, and said to the destroying angel, "It is enough. Now withdraw your hand." You know, with any one passage of Scripture, it's amazing how many lessons we can learn. I mean, I could go on all day, probably just this one passage and the many lessons here. But here we see that instead of David relying and having faith in Yahweh, that he allowed Satan, as Peter once did. Remember, Yahshua said, "Get behind me, Satan," talking to Peter, to deceive him into counting the people. You see, when David did this, he told Yahweh that he had more faith in his own army than he did in Yahweh. He had more trust in his own might than he did Yahweh. As we see, Yahweh wasn't pleased with David here. Remember what James said in James 4:17. James said that when we know to do good and do it not, it is sin. David knew better than to count the people, but yet he still counted the people, even with Joab's warning. Now, as we've seen from all the other accounts, sin here is not without consequence. Yahweh gave David three choices for sin. He said 3 years of famine, number one. Number two was 3 months of persecution from his enemies. And number three was 3 days of Yahweh's sword. David, knowing that Yahweh's mercy was far greater than man's, chose option three, 3 days of Yahweh's sword. And as a result, 70,000 Israelites died. 70,000 Israelites. What would that be, two Jefferson cities? 70,000 Israelites died. Remember that all this began with David counting the people and putting more faith in man instead of in Yahweh. When it comes to sin, brethren, we should never forget the penalty or the impact that it brings. So many people sin without concern for the impact. Some of the sins that bring forth the greatest consequences are divorce, fornication, adultery. It seems that with divorce, the whole family suffers, the children suffer. They're without the nurturing and the leadership of both mother and father. Adultery is the same way. It destroys a family. It will rip apart families. Young people who commit fornication do so without understanding the impact, the consequence of what they're doing. There are so many babies today born out of wedlock. And all this is due to a lack of sin. It's because we refuse to listen. The culture and the problems and all that we're seeing today is nothing more than rebellion. A rebellion from Yahweh. A lack of concern for sin. Sin is a horrible thing, something that we should all try to avoid. This is the goal of Yahweh's word. Yahweh desires a people that are willing to follow Him so that they may seek life, that they may find happiness, that they may have peace. May we obey Yahweh's word and follow in Yahshua's examples and be a light to those who know no better. May Yahweh bless you.